House Committee on Consumer Protection for the Oregon State Legislature. It's Wednesday, May 30th, and we've got a few things on our agenda, a few people here evidently with interest in a bill or two. Is there anybody here that wants to testify today on Senate Bill 484? We're going to be hearing that, having that bill tomorrow, unless somebody's traveled here and can't be here tomorrow. So that makes it easier. Thank you. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 684A. And Steve, give us a brief summary of 684A.
Thank you, Chair Holby. Senate Bill 684A requires a permit for Secretary of from the Secretary of State to conduct a going out of business sale. You have A7 amendments before the committee, which deal with actually not requiring a permit, but a notice of intent filed with the Secretary of State to avoid a fee, because it didn't seem reasonable to charge somebody who's going out of business a fee to go out of business. And also deals with going out of business sale does not include a sale conducted by a bankruptcy trustee or a court-appointed receiver. And the dash 7 is basically a rewrite with those two provisions placed in it.
Thank you. So I'd like to call up Elon Hassan and Becca Feathers. Thank you, and you can decide who's going first and introduce yourself for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Becca Feathers. I'm a legislative assistant to Senator Rick Metzger, who was here last week presenting this bill to you. He could not be here today, so he asked me to be available if you have any questions about the bill. I'm just going to speak very briefly to the amendments. They're made to fix a couple of problems that were still in the bill when it came over from the Senate. The biggest problem, of course, being that there was a fee associated with the permit to go out of business that would require people who wanted to go out of business to pay before they could close their doors. So it changes the word permit to notice of intent. And it's exactly the same requirements. We ask that someone who wants to go out of business give their name, their contact information, and the starting date of their sale to the Secretary of State, which is then up on public record if somebody wants to look for it. The only other change in the amendment is a special exemption for bankruptcy trustees and court-appointed receivers. They do not need to provide a notice of intent. And with that, I'm available for any questions.
Thank you. Chair Holby, members of the committee, my name is Elon Hassan, the Oregon Secretary of State's office. We totally support these amendments. Just to be clear, the Corporation Division is basically a non-regulatory agency. We take filings, so this is right in line with filings that we could easily take at no cost to the state. So we support these amendments. They fix all our problems.
And thank you, and Becca, for clarification. You're speaking strictly of adopting the A7 amendments.
That's correct.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Riley.
Just to clarify, you said the notice of intent was for going out of business, but the notice of intent is really for having a going out of business sale. Is that correct?
My apologies. It is a notice of intent for having the sale. There is nothing in the bill requiring any activity for a business that is just strictly going out of business.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for clarification, the notice of intent gets filed with the Secretary of State's office, but the enforcement is with the DCBS?
The enforcement is with the Department of Justice. There is also a private right of action for competitor businesses. So the Secretary of State's Office Corporation Division, and Ilan can elaborate on this perhaps, is just holding the notice of intent.
Thank you.
Further questions? Not seeing any further questions. Appreciate you coming forward and giving us a brief opportunity to look at the A7 amendment and your take on it.
Anybody else hand up on this? Are we in work session?
Mm-hmm.
I move that,
we're
we
not.
We're not going to move it?
No.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 684 and open a work session on Senate Bill 684. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we adopt the A7 amendments to Senate Bill 684.
Representative Bonamici moves we adopt the A7 amendments to Senate Bill 684. Any discussion? Any objection? They're so adopted. Representative Bonamici.
I move Senate Bill 684 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonamici moves Senate Bill 684A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, Mr. Riley, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Galizio.
Aye.
Representative Gillian. Representative Gerard.
Aye.
Representative Riley?
Aye.
Representative Bonamici?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Oh,
excused. Representative Gillian?
Here.
Are you?
Yes. The
amendment, yes.
Oh, no.
The bill. We adopted the -7 amendments. Now we're voting on the bill.
I apologize for being out of the room. I didn't realize we were moving so fast. And the answer is yes.
Representative Gillian votes yes, and the chair votes
aye as well. Senate Bill 684, having received the required majority votes, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 684 and ask for a carrier.
William was late.
Oh, never mind.
Representative Gilliam, thank you very much.
Yeah.
With that, I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 684.
All.
Everything must go.
You'll have a great time carrying that bill.
Thank you so much. With that, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 94.
I know, that was like 3 days.
Give us a brief review of the bill. And
thank you, Chair. Holvey, Senate Bill 94 revises terminology pertaining to construction claims. Construction Contractors Board dispute resolution. Basically, changes the word claimant to complainant. And Craig Smith, I believe, is here from the DCBS to explain amendments.
Thank you, Craig Smith, please.
CCD, and the amendment that Craig will be talking about is the -1.
Welcome, Mr. Smith. Good to have you back.
Chair Holvey, it's good to be here. Members of the committee, Craig Smith, Construction Contractors Board, here before you to talk about Senate Bill 94, the -1 amendments. Thank you for bringing the fact of this matter is up on the agenda of my attention. It's a small CCB bill. It started out to merely change the word in the statute from claim to complaint. I think I talked to you about this earlier. Fairly simple change. We noticed late in the day that there were some other items that we might be able to correct, and we offered the -1 amendments. In the handout that I'm bringing to you on page number 24, our explanations of those minor changes. For the most part, they are very minor. I'll go through them one at a time. The first one I've labeled A on the little sheet here is merely inserting a statutory reference to 701.1023, which makes it clear that the type of complaint we're talking about there is a dispute resolution complaint as opposed to a complaint regarding illegal activity. Item number B on page 8, line 26, is a similar condition. On page 12, this is an insert that would actually change policy slightly. It would allow the agency to dismiss complaints where the complainant chooses not to cooperate with the board's investigation. We've had this happen a couple of times, where the complainant files a complaint but then doesn't want to meet with us at the job site, or otherwise has not cooperated with our ability to come in and bring the parties together or to look at the alleged defect. And this would allow the agency, if the complainant stops cooperating with the investigation, to stop that dispute resolution complaint. The next matter, item D, on page 25, is really just the opposite. Right now, the board authority requires the board to investigate all complaints with an on-site investigation. But it limits us to just one. Now, we commonly do two investigations when there is a reason to do so on-site. This makes it clear that the board can choose to do an on-site investigation one or more times. And on E, this gets us into a dicey part of the law. This is the slow pay. Don't think residential anymore. Think commercial. Commercial contracts, and this is the area of the board that gets involved with when a contractor doesn't pay a sub on time. There was a conflict. Again, this part of the statute used the word claim, and that sometimes gets confused with the CCB residential claims process. This slightly changed those words and made that a better statute. Does not change the intent of the statute at all. That's the Dash 1 amendments. Be happy to answer any questions. If none, then we urge the passage of the Dash 1 amendments on Sunbelt 94.
Questions from the committee for Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith, we've had a lot of time to look at this bill, and I appreciate your patience on waiting for this bill to come before us on the work session. And I think we don't really have any questions on this bill at this time. Again, thank you for your patience. I'd take a motion on the Dash 1 amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 94.
Representative Bonamici moves we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 94. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, they're so adopted. Representative Bonamici.
I move Senate Bill 94 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonamici moves Senate Bill 94 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Mr. Riley, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Gleason.
Aye.
Representative Gilliam.
Aye.
Representative Drodge.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Representative Bonamici.
Aye.
Representative
Johnson.
Chair Holby.
Aye. Senate Bill 94, having received the required majority votes, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I believe we could put this one on the consent calendar. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. With that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 94 and open a... Now that we got that straightened out, I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 965A. Do we have the old one? Thank you, Mike. Steve, give us a brief summary of the bill, if you would, please.
Thank you, Chair Holby. Senate Bill 965A requires lenders involved in residential property non-traditional mortgage products to ensure loan terms and underwriting standards for products and consider a borrower's repayment capacity and risk mitigation factors.
So I'm going to start with a sign-up sheet that we had from a couple days ago, and I'm going to read names. They may or may not be here, but I'm going to start with Ken Perry. Ken Perry, Mike Woods, and Rick Bennett. None of them seem to be here. Oh, wait a second. They are here. Yeah.
Rick, if you want to wait, I'll call you up separately if you wish.
Okay.
Thank you. Let me call up one other person, Melissa Stashen. Is she here? And she's a pass. Then how about Kaylee Ridge? No Kaylee Ridge. Ann McVeigh? And no Ann McVeigh. Steve Emery. Michael Henry. Getting through people quick. Well, let's go ahead and start with you two. I think we just exhausted. Yes.
Did you read off of today's list?
Not yet. Thank you for reminding me, though. I'll get to it. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm Michael Woods, and I am 50 years old, and I've been in the electronics firm in business for the past 25 years, and I'm making a change in my life and going into the real estate world, and I've been studying this for the past 6 months, all the laws and everything that's required of me to be a good real estate agent. Basically what I want to say is I from reading this bill and from looking at it and everything that I've seen so far, I have a feeling I'm probably going to go back to the electronics business if this goes through. It kind of scares me, and I think it has a domino effect on our economy. It's just one of those things that can have a lot of effect on a lot of different people's lives, not just borrowers and the mortgage business, but real estate agents and appraisers and people that do handyman kind of stuff and painters and this and that. And you know, I just want you to know I don't have anything written down. I'm just going from the cuff here, you know. But I'd really like to get my license and be a good real estate agent in this state. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And introduce yourself for the record, please.
Chair Hovey, committee members, my name is Ken Perry. I own Broker Knowledge Group, a mortgage training and consulting firm. I currently teach 44 hours of mortgage compliance and fair lending laws across the country. In studying this, I'd like to bring just a bit of clarity to everybody, make it everything as simple as I possibly can, because I think it's a simple issue we're dealing with. To give you a brief, before I get too far into it, I currently am on a 5-year interest-only stated income adjustable rate mortgage loan. I got it because I was self-employed. It was the loan that I could get, the loan that was available for me. It got me into a house, and I've paid on time every single month, and I'm proud to be in that loan. There are loan products out there that we're trying to limit through this bill, and I think it's unnecessary. And let me just give you a few things. So that you know, 5 federal agencies, for the first time, I think, in our nation's history, agreed on one thing, and that was that non-traditional loans do need to be regulated in some way. They did this last year. When they did it, all 5 agencies sent out the federal guidance that was given to all banking institutions. All banking institutions at the time changed their guidelines to be more responsible in lending. They've done that, and all we've been hit with over the last year is adjustments to guidelines to be more responsible, to make sure that the borrower is taken care of, also to address the foreclosure rates throughout America. They tried to do this. What you see before you is basically an implementation of the non-traditional guidance, but you're seeing an implementation and then some. They've actually added too much to the bill to make it a little bit crazy. What states like Washington has done is Washington accepted this guidance just as Oregon has accepted it, and they flow it through their current law, which is working effectively. The problem's been solved on non-traditional loans. The crazy stuff that you think people have been put into that they have is actually gone. It's off the market. It's been regulated by the federal agencies, and it's controlled. In Oregon, just so you know, stat-wise, I've given you a couple different reports. One was given to you by your state economist, Dave Bake, I want to say, who says Oregon has the second lowest rate of mortgage delinquencies in the nation. We actually are only beat by North Dakota. We pay our bills on time. The lending that's been done in Oregon has been done responsibly. And to hold us to any higher standard than any other state or than the federal guidance would actually be absurd. Because we're the ones actually doing it right. We've got some very ethical originators in this state. We also have the most strict education guidelines for mortgage brokers in our state. Across America, we're the most strict. We're educating the loan originators. They are responsible loan originators. It shows in these guidelines, in these statistics, it also shows in the chart I gave you from Realty Track on foreclosures, showing that Oregon is actually down 19.3% year-to-year in foreclosures. So from last year to this year, we're actually way better than we were. While the guidelines have been tightened up, so have in Oregon, our payments have been getting better. And actually, in Oregon, you didn't even need to tighten the guidelines. That was more an issue for the Californias, the Miamis, the people who where there was high concentrations of mortgage fraud and abuse of the product. And so I would ask, and just in showing up today and seeing Dash 8, the Dash 8 amendment, does exactly what would need to be done, which is it just takes that non-traditional guidance, applies it in the state of Oregon, adopts it, and puts it into rule where the state gets, the Department of Finance gets to look at it and decide what they'd like to do with it, what type of guidelines they'd like to make, and it ties them to the already done federal non-traditional guidance. So the problem has been solved federally. Brokers do not make lending decisions, and so regulating them as such, it wouldn't do anything except for hold them to a new liability that just doesn't make sense when they're not making the product decisions. And the federal guidance does cover the banks that are making decisions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anybody got questions of these gentlemen?
Very brief.
Representative Riley.
So, if I understand you correctly, there's nothing in this bill that would solve any problem. Nobody's doing this stuff anyway.
Not necessarily. The bill is being held up as a subprime bill. It's not a subprime lending bill. It's a non-traditional non-traditional loan bill.
Mm-hmm.
The only things that are in there that would cause the only things that are in there are fairly dangerous to industry, and that's why everybody's coming forward.
What are they?
When you look at the definitions, actually, this is in my written testimony. The definitions, you've got a reduced documentation being called a non-traditional loan. You also have interest only being added in there as non-traditional. And then it forces all of the liability, which are all of the issues at the very end of the bill, being heaped on the mortgage broker when doing those loans. So the reduced documentation loan, it's every loan being done in America right now. That's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, your government-sponsored enterprises that are doing these loans. A reduced documentation to them just means you don't show 2 years' tax return, you show one. It's a normal loan. And so it's overreaching in its definitions of non-traditional loans.
Representative Riley.
I heard you say that it's overreaching and I hear you say that nobody's doing anything that this would, we don't need this.
Absolutely right.
So what's the problem that it causes?
What's the problem that it causes?
Yeah, what's the problem the bill causes?
Well, I would say you wouldn't want to pass a bill just for passing a bill's sake. It adds...
I didn't ask you that.
Okay.
What's the problem the bill causes?
It puts into the state's hands the ability to regulate product that is currently being done efficiently and effectively without giving, by rule, the ability for everybody to chime in and work through the process. And then it has in it, it's got one of the biggest things I see in the bill, the banks are actually required to have due diligence on the mortgage broker that is doing the loan, which means they now have to jump into the mortgage broker's office to actually work with them and make sure that they're coached correctly on this, which is not the bank's job, nor do they want the job. And if you take out, if you look at the fact that the banks will not be regulated by this, if I'm a bank and I've got new requirements if I go through brokers and I'm not regulated by the bill that the requirements are in, I'll just lend to everybody else. I'll just lend directly to consumer. I don't need the mortgage broker if the mortgage broker is going to cost me possible litigation and fines. I'll just bring the consumer into my door, continue to do the non-traditional guidance as set up by the federal government, which is not as restrictive as the Oregon State one. And so they would be able to just continue to lend, whereas the mortgage broker would be then an unnecessary entity. Montgomery County just had this happen in Alabama, where they passed a law that was overreaching. The banks said, we're not going to work with mortgage brokers anymore. They're backing out one by one. Georgia did the same thing. It's happened across the
country. Because they're federally regulated.
Absolutely. They run
Thank
under
you.
Different rules.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Appreciate your testimony, your written testimony as well. That's very helpful to us.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming forward. Next up, I'd like to have Rick Bennett. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
Chairman, please. For the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations, AARP. predatory mortgage lending practices has been an issue that AARP has been very much involved in, both at the national level and in individual states. It's an issue that our members are very much concerned with. I would mention that we've also worked very closely with the Center for Responsible Lending on this issue in a number of states, and we find the center to be a very credible source of information on this issue. Many predatory loans are offered that target the most vulnerable Oregonians, including the elderly. Our older citizens tend to own their homes outright or have a high percentage of equity in them. This makes them an inviting target for unscrupulous lenders, seeking to relieve them of as much of that equity as possible. AARP is concerned that the current combination of minimal underwriting standards and exotic and complex mortgage products has created a perfect storm that is driving homeowners into foreclosure, or will soon. If everyone acted in a fair and ethical manner, we wouldn't need laws. Governing either professional practice or in our personal lives. But the fact is, while I'm sure many of these lenders do the very best for their customers, the consumer, people trying to get into homes or refinance their homes, the reality is that there is a small group of people who are not ethical and do not act in that manner. And that's why we do need laws to protect our citizens. It's my understanding that approximately 80% of the subprime lenders operating in Oregon also operate in North Carolina and New Mexico, and they do so quite well without any major disruption in their business. And frankly, what we have before us here today in Senate Bill 968 is not nearly as strict as the laws in those states. AARP supports Senate Bill 965. We also support the proposed amendments. I believe they're Dash 7 and Dash 11s related to loan flipping and prepayment penalties. With that, you have my written testimony, and I'll conclude my comments at that point. One other thing, Mr. Chairman, this may be the last opportunity I have to testify before you in this committee. In the past, on more than one occasion, you've asked what AARP stands for, and I've to respond, I brought the CD version of our 2007 public policy manual, and for both you and your committee, and I hope that will be of some help to you, and perhaps in the fall provide some interesting reading as well. And I think they only cost a few pennies a piece, so I don't think there's any problem with the current gift guidelines. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Any questions for Mr. Bennett? Appreciate you coming forward with your written testimony today and your comments as well.
Thank you.
Is there Michael Henry in the audience wishes to testify? No, Allie Jogwe? No. Then I think we'll move on with Fred Stewart, Steve Henson, and
Matt Stashen.
Oh, we already have a Stashen? Thank you, gentlemen. If you can just decide who gets to go first and state your name for the record.
Okay, for the record, my name is Steve Ensign. I'm a mortgage loan originator, and I'm also a real estate investor in the state of Oregon. And I would like to address Senate Bill 965 and why I think it's, in general, a bad idea. And while it's fresh in my mind, I'll address your question, Representative Riley, of why I think this is a bad bill for the industry. And the one provision in the bill that is the most scary part is that it's going to hold mortgage brokers responsible for 3 years after the signing of a loan if that loan goes in default. It's bad for several reasons. One is that the mortgage broker does not make the final decision on a loan. Those are, these loans are heavily underwritten. Second of all, to hold somebody responsible for things like personal choice or circumstances in their life for a three-year period, it seems like a very long time, even if you were to hold people accountable for writing these loans. Who can predict what's going to happen 2.5 years from now? But overall, it holds the people who aren't responsible for making the final decision on this. And I think the ramifications of this bill over the throughout the state in real estate are going to be property values dropping dramatically, because what's going to happen, and I can tell you this from the point of view of a loan originator, is that lenders are very skittish. There were over 100 lenders that went out of business since the first of the year in the subprime market. And as Ken Perry said, there's been adjustments and whatnot to underwriting loans. Every week we come across a new guideline, a new whatever. So the industry has been adjusting itself. So that's what he says makes the bill unnecessary. But the problem is these lenders are going to look at this bill and say, well, if I write a non-traditional loan, i.e. interest-only, reduced documentation, stated income, construction interest-only loans, if I'm going to write that loan and be responsible for 3 years, I'm not doing it. And so the loans just won't get written. And this bill does not address, by the way, banks, traditional banks like Bank of America, Bank of the West, U.S. Bank. They don't have to follow these guidelines. They don't have to have half of the disclosures that we have in writing a loan, and so they're not going to be affected, but they don't offer these products. So it's just going to cut out a large segment of self-employed people and people who want to buy a home or refinance their home with an appropriate loan to pull equity out of their house. You know, there's always a reason somebody wants to pull equity out of their home. If they're self-employed, they're just not going to have the opportunity under this bill, because the lender's going to run in the other direction, period. They're just not going to write the loan, and so they're going to be stuck. If all of you are homeowners, your home values are going to drop. Then guaranteed, your equity that you hold in your home right now is going to be reduced significantly, because you can't get a loan to refinance in it if you are self-employed or don't have traditional guidelines. And I've listed a whole bunch of other things here that you can see before you, but that's the main problem, and it's going to ripple into higher rents, because investors aren't going to be able to go into pay option ARM loans and have cash flow on their rental properties. They're going to bump the rents up. It should, from an investor point of view, that's what I'll have to do. You know, if I can't buy, a duplex with a pay option ARM loan and have the lowest payment possible, then I'm going to have to charge rents that are, you know, that keep up with my payments, which means probably double or even more the rent. So it's going to affect negatively everybody across the board when it comes to real estate or anybody who owns property in the state. The scary part about this is that you've asked for an emergency status on this bill when there's no emergency in the state. Admittedly, on line 38 of the Senate bill amendment, it says Oregon has not yet experienced the rapid rates of falling home prices. In fact, we're in a growth period still. Nor the foreclosure rate, as Ken Perry testified, were less than a third of the national foreclosure rate, and yet you've asked for emergency status on this bill, and we don't feel in the mortgage industry like we've had enough notification to help address this bill. It got through the Senate before we even knew it existed, and now it's being fast-tracked through the House, and we don't feel that there's valid statistics to substantiate the claims that non-traditional mortgages are the cause of foreclosures. Solely the cause of foreclosures, and that's what's being claimed. That's the scary part, is they're labeling everything that's not a 30-year fixed loan as a non-traditional loan and targeting the people that write those loans based on no statistics. So that's the troubling part. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you.
If there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
We'll go ahead and listen to some more testimony, because I'm sure we got a huge list of people that want to weigh in, so we're going to try to keep moving through that. If you can be concise and short, that would be appreciative. Hit your main points.
Mr. Chair, can I just, Representative Riley did this on the other day, and I just want to make it clear to people, there's been some information disseminated that this bill will ban non-traditional loans, and I just want to make sure that everybody understands that that's not what this bill does. It simply says that the non-traditional loans, it's on page 3, a lender offering, originating, or servicing a non-traditional mortgage product shall ensure that loan terms and underwriting standards for the product are consistent with prudent lending practices, including consideration of a borrower's repayment capacity. So I want to make sure everybody understands that. We're not banning non-traditional loans. So it would be really helpful for us if you kept that in mind as you're all testifying.
May I address that briefly?
Absolutely. Please
do. I understand that this doesn't ban loans, but as I stated, it doesn't take a ban to scare the lenders off. If they think they're going to be held liable for 3 years after a loan is written and opened up to a lawsuit by the borrower, if they sell a loan to a borrower who qualifies at the time and 2.5 or 3 years from then doesn't qualify, the lenders are just going to quit lending in this state.
And Mr. Chair, I need to ask, can you please tell us where the which part you're interpreting as a three-year liability?
Actually, I got that portion out of an article in the business section of the Oregonian of the original version of this bill. I only have the amendment version and what I pulled down off of your website. But it's our understanding that that is part of the bill, is that it holds people accountable for a period of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you go ahead with your testimony, please, and state your name for the record?
Sure. My name is Matt Stachin. I'm the co-owner of one of the largest mortgage brokerage companies in the state of Oregon, called Pacific Residential Mortgage. I'm here to address solutions to what I perceive are complex issues of this Bill 965. For one, the definitions of non-traditional loan are too broad. As Representative Bonamici stated, it does not ban particular products. However, it does not do a good job of defining what the difference is between many of the products that exist in our industry today that are excellent products, that are every bit viable for most of the borrowers that are placed in those loans. I think one of our industry's questions about the scope of this bill is it trying to manage to the exception or to the rule? I think we all recognize that no matter what industry we're speaking of, there are people that don't do things ethically, they don't do them correctly, and those are the very folks that take advantage of consumers. I believe that I speak for everybody in our industry when I say that we are for consumer protection. We just want to make sure that the bill properly addresses different things. So in my written testimony, I've submitted to you some changes that we would like to see made to the bill, including further definition of certain terms, which you can see for yourselves on the written testimony. I understand there are some amendments forthcoming that will address many of the concerns, potentially some of the concerns that I'm going to share with you today. Unfortunately, we haven't had the opportunity to see those amendments written, so I cannot give you comment as to whether or not we support them at this time. The automated underwriting system is a good system. It's important that the representatives in the House understand that a loan officer who sells the product on a retail level to a consumer does not make an underwriting decision. We simply perform the function of counseling, and we offer suggestions or options to the borrower based on what our opinion is of what the best fit is for them amongst the loan products that exist. The automated underwriting system is a good system that protects consumers and protects lenders at the same time. It is a living system based on years of experience and millions of loans, both performing and non-performing. And the automated system at its very origin was created by the two largest federal agencies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. As a living system, it gets adjusted as needed. You're aware of the federal guidance that's been issued last November and has been adopted by a couple of states, and I think some of the amendments will propose that we adopt that here in this bill. That's a good thing. The automated underwriting systems also get adjusted by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac periodically as needed. And it also makes one thing that is important that you understand about the automated underwriting system, it makes the process blind. the process of underwriting a loan, giving the actual decision as to whether or not the borrower qualifies to receive that loan or not, it makes it blind to discrimination. When human beings underwrite a loan, whether they recognize it or not, sometimes discrimination becomes a factor. Automated underwriting system is a computer system, and it is completely blind to those factors. It simply takes into consideration the information that's input into it off of the borrower's loan application. We would like to work with the DCBS this afternoon and tomorrow to review the amendments and work through any of the remaining issues. Amendments, whatever amendments are adopted to this bill, they need to eliminate the liabilities of lenders under the bill if they use the automated underwriting system to originate loans. Automated underwriting system and federal guidance both address most of the issues that you're looking to resolve. Protection of the consumer and not stopping business from continuing to take place so that we don't have a negative economic impact in our state. Beyond the federal guidance, further AUS changes are in the works with both Fannie and Freddie at this time. Originators don't make underwriting decisions. We talked about that before. The automated underwriting system does. There's a lot of speculation as to what foreclosure rates are and what they aren't. Of course, we can look up the statistics. We understand that the statistics are overwhelmingly in favor that Oregon has a very, very low rate of these types of problems. We don't want just any bill. We'd like a bill that protects consumers and keeps ethical lenders making good loans so that all Oregonians continue to realize the dream of home ownership. That, to us, is what's most important in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it. State your name for the record, please.
Yes. My name is Fred Stewart. I've been in the industry either on the real estate side as far as a real estate agent. I was a real estate agent, a real estate broker. I've been a loan officer, and now I'm a lender with a bank. And I got to tell you that even though, I don't know if you guys will think I look old or young, I'm 42, I've been in the business since about 1987. So I've got nearly 20 years worth of experience in this. And when I read this bill, it scares me. Matter of fact, I called up a very, very good friend of mine, City Commissioner Eric Sten, and told him that I just got scared for the first time since 1990. I said, I think redlining is on its way back to Oregon. And I've been saying up until now that redlining and has been defeated by good old-fashioned competition. And, of course, the good graces of the good people of this state. This bill will limit competition in Oregon, period. It will allow people who have succeeded very well over the last 20 years as Oregon has grown, most importantly, the private single business owner, the small business owner, it will hurt them beyond compare if the mortgage industry retracts. When I came into this business as a 23-year-old former Marine, as aggressive as you can imagine, all I wanted to do was sell as many homes as I could in the neighborhood that I grew up in, which was in inner north and northeast Portland. I did not get a bank loan closed in inner northeast Portland until 1993. But by then, I had already funded with mortgage brokers, and many of the loans that we did back then would fit the non-traditional standard in here. I funded nearly $40 million worth of loans in that period of time. $40 million before I got my first bank loan. And I only got that because the city of Portland began to take the banks to task for not doing loans in northeast Portland. Now, when Eric Sten and I forget his name, and I'm sorry about this. He was the Secretary of State at the time. I'll take that back. I think his name was as Ted Kulongoski. When Ted Kulongoski asked me, Fred, why is it that you can close so many loans in northeast Portland, but U.S. Bank has only done $150,000, And I said, because the mortgage companies want to do the business. That caused competition. And as Northeast Portland grew, as Northwest Portland grew, because I'm not going to waste your time talking about how tough it was to get a loan in the Pearl District back in the day, okay? As the economy grew, as opportunities grew, competition is what alleviated this state, this, in my opinion, almost eradicated redlining. One of the things Matt talked about was automated underwriting. He's 100% correct. Automated underwriting basically wiped away any type of blemish, in my opinion. So my fear is, if this bill is passed in its present form, I don't think you're going to get what you're looking to get. I mean, I commend people in this state for looking out for the underdog. It's one of the reasons I love this state. I work for an international company right now, and they're always trying to get me to work everywhere else but here. And I want, this is my home. So I commend that you guys are wanting to get into this, but I can guarantee you that this is not going to get us there. What I would like to suggest in my closing here is that we take more time, that we take a pause, and that we invite more active discussion on how to get this done. We have literally got, and I can say this too on a very personal note, the absolute best professionals in the mortgage industry is here in the state of Oregon, period. My bosses who do business all over the world, they come here and meet people like Matt and others here, and they leave here, and they're just blown away at the professionalism and the integrity of the people here. I ain't saying everybody's perfect. Nobody is. But as a body, we have got a gem in the mortgage industry in Oregon. So I would call on you, I would call on the state to lean on them, let them know what your expectations are for the protection of those who need protection. But also, too, let's protect this industry, the mortgage broker industry, because the moment we lose them as a competitor in this market, the moment we go back to 1987 when banks were the majority rule in this market, what we've experienced in growth in over the last 20 years will start to go away, and it'll start to go away real quick. Anyway, that's about it. Hope I haven't wasted too much of your time.
Not at all. Thank you very much for your testimony. And I don't normally applause in the legislature or nothing, but I don't appreciate their comments, and I can tell you that the bill will not pass in its present form. It will be amended if, in fact, it goes forward. But I do appreciate the comments brought forward. I'm going to have to start limiting people to the amount of time they take. Otherwise, people aren't going to get a chance to talk, so if you can really just hit subjects that haven't been hit before or something that you really think is important to stress to this committee, it would be helpful. Next, I'd like up Lynette Wyrick, Sam Kroskel, and Don Weathers.
Oh, the sounds are low. I think we got left.
And I know it may be difficult if you've provided written testimony, please don't read it to us, but just summarize it and see if you can do it in about 2 minutes. Otherwise, we won't get through our list and somebody will go away mad. And I don't like that. Thank you. If you could introduce yourself for the record, I appreciate it.
I'm Lynette Wyrick, principal broker with RE/MAX Equity Group. I'm licensed both in Oregon and Washington. I've been a realtor for 11 years. I hold the ABR, which is the Accredited Buyer's Representative designation. I'm a CRS, which is the Accredited Residential Specialist, also known as the PhD of Real Estate. I have a GRI, which is the Graduate Realtor Institute designation, and I'm an EPRO, which is the Internet Professional. I'm also a platinum member of the Portland Million Dollar Club and the 2007 State Vice President of the Oregon CRS Chapter. I'm also a member of the not only the RMLS in the Portland-Vancouver metro area, but also the Willamette Valley Multiple Listing Service. Outside of real estate, I have a bachelor's, a master's, and a doctorate. I've been in some sort of sales and marketing position since 1978. Before getting into real estate in 1996, I was a partner of the first joint venture small business with the former Soviet Union. I've negotiated with foreign heads of state and have done international contracts. Since 1996, I've worked with seasoned professional mortgage brokers and planners and assisting buyers, in many cases first-time buyers, in the purchase of principal residences and investment properties. Even though I have concerns about predatory lending, I don't see SB 965 providing a solution, and in the end, more damage than consumer protection in its present form. If you understand the power of leveraging money and what non-traditional lending products provide, not only first-time home buyers, but your move-up buyers, your investors, your developers, all need to have these kinds of products available. Even our own industry, mortgage brokers and realtors, are held to a higher mode when we apply for a mortgage ourselves. We are not subject to allowed to have just traditional type lending products. So we need these stated income products and the non-traditional products in order to be homeowners and real estate investors ourselves. For example, limiting interest-only loans penalizes buyers who realistically expect to earn more in the near future and would benefit actually from purchasing a home now rather than having to wait as the home values continue to appreciate. In some cases, first-time buyers have bruised credit, and a non-prime mortgage solution provides them the ability to purchase a home with a lower interest rate for a fixed number of years, 2 or 3 years, allowing them to buy a home now and repair their credit issues and prepare for a more permanent lending solution while building home equity and benefiting from home appreciation. I've had a client successfully utilize one of the payment option loans, or also known as four option ARM. Some aligned in the media for just bad press. This client had fluctuating income, and in the months when her income was low, she made a minimum or was allowed to make a minimum payment or interest-only payment by using this product. In the months during normal income, she was able to make full principal and interest payments. Additionally, this legislation makes lenders responsible for occurrences which are simply not predictable. Who can foresee a divorce, a job loss, or any other life setbacks during the lending process? Also, as mentioned earlier, foreclosures, I don't see the numbers as being a factor in Oregon, especially when compared to other states. I belong to several organizations that are national that include other mortgage brokers and real estate professionals, and in talking with them, foreclosures are almost non-existent in Oregon compared to what's happening with these other associate states. This bill doesn't prohibit employers from reducing hours or laying off workers, closing plants, or moving facilities out of state. This bill doesn't prohibit borrowers from making bad decisions or mandate living within their means. Oregon has already been a leader in licensing their mortgage brokers, being an example for the nation, with Washington following suit beginning of January 2007. This legislation does impose onerous rules and responsibility penalties on lenders who productively produce 2 of 3 borrowers with mortgage solutions, while banks see the severe handicapping of their more flexible and successful mortgage brokers. And in a side note, whenever I've had a client who's using a banking institution, I've had more problems with those loans because the banks are not equipped to handhold and walk the client step by step through the process. Typically, the banking institution loan originators do not attend the client's signing, escrow signing at their escrow closings. In my 11 years, I've only had one banking institution loan originator physically show up for the client's closing. All of the mortgage brokers that I've worked with in my past 11 years, I have to say, truthfully, every one of them has been attending my client's or at my client's closings. While I applaud the legislature's desire and goal to protect Oregonians from predatory lending practices, this bill does little to protect consumers and more to protect banks and large financial institutions from competition. Frankly, should this bill become law, I foresee a chilling effect on current homeowners' home values and a sharp reduction in buyers' ability to obtain suitable financing options to meet their needs. And this morning I sat down and went over my business from 2002 to present, and all of my transactions, save two, use non-traditional financing. And in the two cases, it made more sense because the purchasers were going to be in their homes for a long period of time. But any time a buyer is only going to be or hold a property for 5 years or less, it doesn't make sense to put them in a conforming product, a 30-year fixed mortgage. The 30-year fixed mortgage is the most expensive loan product that you can put a purchaser of real estate in. So my concerns today are not only about what I've expressed in my deliberation, but it's also as a realtor, because if 75% of the mortgage business in Oregon is dealing or has to do with non-traditional loans, then I too will be out of business, and this scares me. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, and you know, I know it's tough to try to keep things to 2 minutes, but you know, she just took four people's spots probably, but I think it was important. She probably said some things that some other people might say, but if you can try to be brief, I'd appreciate it, but I'm not going to cut you off.
I cut out half.
Yeah, I bet you did. Yeah, that's why I said I know it's tough, but go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, please.
My name is Sam Kroskel. I'm a mortgage broker, loan originator with Pacific Rim Mortgage. I have earned the CMPS, which is Certified Mortgage Planning Specialist designation. Excuse me, designation. It's a little warm up here suddenly, I think. I would tell you that there is a mortgage, there is not a mortgage crisis, but there are mortgages in crisis. And that is what a lot of us are concerned about. Many of those folks who are facing mortgages that are in crisis have done so out of their own foolishness, foolhardiness, and wishful thinking. If they have dealt with a mortgage broker, more than likely, they have in fact been properly vetted, prepared, and looking forward as far as what are your underwritings, what are your goals, what are your plans. And the number of borrowers buying not only their first home, perhaps their second, third, about to have a youngster go off to college, are going to be utilizing a non-traditional mortgage, that being a no-doc, a stated income, an adjustable rate mortgage, because of the increased cash flow that may in fact be needed during that period of time. My concern is that while Senate Bill 965, from its first writing to today, it's gone through a very mysterious change. The language is completely different from the originally introduced bill, and that concerns me. It means, in fact, that there's been a deft sleight of hand going on as far as the original intent of the bill and the subsequent changing of colors in the legislation. The bill, as it stands right now, will severely damage creditworthy Oregonians' ability to obtain prudent, reasonable financing. It has far overstepped any legislative intent originally. It is not the kind of bill that Oregonians need or deserve. The so-called consumer protection bill is more accurately characterized as the inept Mortgage Banking Preservation Act. Consumers have voted with their choice of mortgage lenders in the past, meaning roughly that fewer than 30% of the mortgages are originated and funded by bankers. Those of us sitting in this audience provide flexible financing. If we're good at our job, we actually spend an hour and a half to 2 hours initially sitting down with the client to find out what their needs, wants, and desires are. We have a very good understanding. I like to call what I do a fiscal physical with a client. I know more about them from their credit report, their credit history, their hopes, and their dreams. I've approached my practice much as a physician would. I look at a mortgage as a financial prescription to meet an end goal or need. A wise mortgage prescription of an interest-only loan for one client simply might not be a wise financial instrument to utilize for another individual. I could go on and on about what I perceive as the shortfalls of Senate Bill 965, but it would be akin to kicking an injured dog. The unintended consequences of SB 965 will mean an ill-advised reduction in choices provided to Oregon consumers. It will create liabilities for lenders to be prescient. We need to suddenly become fortune tellers of those ills that might befall a client sitting before us. Frankly, many consumers have also utilized internet-based lenders, generally trusting what are little more than data entry clerks with their financial future. These consumers chose the lowest payment, not the well-counseled advice of a mortgage professional and a personal individual circumstance-specific consultation. As SB 965 currently sits, it resembles another well-intended but seriously flawed piece of legislation that most of us know as the school zone safety bill. SB 965 creates far more onerous problems for Oregonians than it resolves. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself to the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Don Weathers. I live in Westland, and I'm before you as a consumer. I'm not associated with the industry being discussed here today in any way, shape, or form, and I come voluntarily to this hearing. I have 6 points, and I'll try to respect your time. I'll begin by saying that I've lived in Oregon 28 years. I've owned 7 houses, six in Lake Oswego and 1 in Westland, which I've owned now for 10 years. In addition to those originating loans with those homes, I've refinanced for in the attempt to gain a better rate about 6 times. And throughout the sum of those transactions, I've dealt with mortgage brokers about 2/3 of the time, and I will say the last 2/3 of that track record. And I have found the individuals that I've worked with to be outstanding, to provide true value added. I've recommended them to my best friends, several bosses, and my own kids. My read of this bill is the intentions are honorable, but I think the unintended consequences of a lot of what you've already heard, and I'll attempt not to duplicate that, are real and should be avoided. I'm 60 years old, and I'm now setting on a 5 3/8% loan. I don't intend to ever repay that because I've told my wife that's the cheapest money we'll ever have. But I am concerned about my kids, all of who are in starter homes now. My youngest was able to get into a house with $8,000, and it was not with a conventional loan that he got into that. After 4 years, his accumulated equity is probably in excess of 100. Most of that through market appreciation, some of it from sweat equity. So what I would ask as a lay person is that, one, the flexibility to the consumer be retained here, because there are many people with differing needs that a 30-year fix just doesn't work. These other products on the market do enable them to get in, buy a house, get on that bus, that's the analogy I use with my kids, is get on the bus and follow that appreciation curve. So I know I'm surpassing my 2 minutes, but I'll try to get to probably the primary issue here is that of liability, and that's been discussed here thoroughly already, is the mortgage brokers don't make the calls here. They are not the ones doing the underwriting. They are not the ones approving the loans, but they are great facilitators. And as I stated earlier, I've found their services to be outstanding. So in closing, from a consumer point of view, I feel this bill does need more homework, if you will, does need some reshaping. Its intent is good. So I'll close with that statement. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming forward with your testimony today. I'm just going to make one comment that, you know, no disrespect, but, you know, no, I don't want people to come across, you know, with a disdain for the legislature, because there's no sleight of hand with these bills. As they're originally introduced, there's very, very few bills that start out with one set of language and end up with that exact set of language as they make it through the process. This particular bill has been amended on the Senate side, and in fact, Jim Markey of the Oregon Mortgage Lenders Association stated that they strongly favored the -4 amendments over the -2 amendments, and so it's that your own organization that's been helping make amendments to this bill as it's proceeded through the process. So please don't. It may not be you, but there are professional organizations and lobbyists and things that are helping out in this process. There's no sleight of hand. Everything's in public process. So I just want you to know we're trying to do the best we can to do the right thing by the state of Oregon and the right thing by business and the economy as well. So with that, I appreciate your comments today. Next up, I'd like to have Lori DeBond, Elaine Miller, and Sonia Greenman. Thank you. If you can introduce yourself for the record, please. And
yeah, my name is Lori DeBord, and I am a business owner in Albany, Oregon for 13 years. I'm 40 years old. I'm a single mother of four children, two in college and two at home still. I am sitting here before you I'm a consumer of the products that are in this bill, that if this bill was passed as written, and I understand it can be changed, I would not have been able to get a loan. And why I want to speak with you guys is because I feel, on top of all the mortgage brokers talking about how they do their process, that you guys need to hear from someone like me that has benefited greatly and worked very hard to get where I'm at. I am currently, this is going into my first year of my loan, and it is a non-traditional loan. It was based upon my deposits and my revenue that I take in at my business. I ran it for 13 years, and I qualified for it. As you would probably know, I jumped around in circles and was very, very excited that I qualified for it. And I feel like I was very deserving of it. If this bill passes, I would not have that opportunity, nor would I probably have the opportunity to refinance. Here's what I want you to know. After a year, I've paid on time. I'm capable of refinancing at a lower interest rate. My property value has increased. Do I need to stop? My property value has increased, and I'm actually, for the first time in my 40 years of life and four children on my own without being on governmental assistance, volunteering at a school, running a school for 13 years, and making a difference in young men and women's lives, I'm actually going to be at a different income level than I've ever been in 13 years. If you make this bill pass, I cannot do that. I won't be able to refinance, or I wouldn't have been able to even get it. And I am blessed to be able to have gotten it. My mortgage broker worked hard for me, found a product out there that was available. If this bill passes, that product wouldn't be available. And it was available. I'm very excited about that. And I'm going to actually be able to manage cash flow a lot differently because of it, because I have equity into it, and make a difference for not only my family and how I raise my children or how I support them, but Representative Riley asked earlier ago, how would this affect people? Well, it's going to make a difference if I can continue and refinance and make a difference in my cash flow at my business. How it would affect me is greatly. However, what concerns me is that I own a business where I pay a lease to a person that they rely in their retirement
on what I do. If I'm not able to do that, I'm probably going to close, relocate out of Oregon. And I can promise you that I've talked to a lot of other consumers, colleagues of mine, mentors of mine, that are consumers. We're not mortgage brokers. We own businesses. We have deposits, but we can only, and I pay taxes, and we can only account for so much of that money because all the rest of our money goes out in expenses. So in order for a bank to loan us money, we don't make enough money. But for a non-traditional loan to qualify us, based upon our deposits, we make enough money. So that's exciting. This bill would take that away. Earlier, the last thing I want to talk on is earlier a representative from a company that I think originally originated this bill to come up is basically fraud going on in maybe specifically our state. That doesn't happen for a lot of us because we go to mortgage brokers and they protect us. Like all these people are talking about, these professionals that we go to turn to, myself as well as my bank, but my mortgage broker, my real estate agent, and we pay money for these people to do this for us and to protect us. So people that are being damaged by it, maybe elderly, my retired mother, 76 years old, she refuses to answer phone calls or engage in anything, go on the internet, get a loan there. So some of these people that might be having that happen to them, that is very honorable that this could possibly protect them, they need some other kind of bill. Something to not go on the internet or something to avoid the phone calls, because my elderly mother doesn't do that. Those of us that can go to the mortgage brokers, that can go to the real estate agents and live substantially and pay our taxes and run our business and be a single mother, deserve the right to be able to have those non-traditional loans based upon our deposits, whereas a bank would not do that. What this bill would do, Mr. Riley, is it would take away the opportunity for someone like me to be able to do that. And it would really never allow me to have a mortgage. And I'm capable of paying that. And I deserve that opportunity. Just to protect people that don't know really how to protect themselves. So you really need to think about, I appreciate that you guys talked about rewording the wording, but I'm absolutely petrified. The last thing I want to say is what petrifies me as a consumer is I was oblivious to this until my mortgage broker called me and told me about how this could affect, how it would have been if it would have been in effect earlier, and I would have never gotten my loan, and what could affect me in the future. It concerns me that here I'm running a business, I'm buying a home, and I don't even know about it. So that really concerned me. I don't know how I would have known about it unless they would have called me. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, my name is Elaine Miller, and I am here as a homeowner and a consumer. And I'm not involved in the mortgage business or the real estate business or anything like that. My husband and I currently have a 5-year interest-only loan. It's worked very well for us. We have a strong equity in our home. We are also in the process of retiring, which is a little frightening when you've been working for 30-some years to all of a sudden say, oh, I'm on a fixed income. By having the interest-only loan, it's helped us be able to look at our finances and see where we're going to be in 5 years, in 10 years. We're also in the process of selling our current home and buying a townhome. We're looking and wanting to get another interest-only loan for a short period of time to help us be able to manage our income. We feel that would give us the opportunity to say, all right, down the road, our expenses are going to be less. We can be able to afford more, put it against our mortgage. Working with our mortgage broker, he has been excellent in showing us the different opportunities that are there, discussing them with us, and coming up with what was going to work the best for us. And I just am against them as it is currently written. I think some of the amendments are great, and I'd like to see it move forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Sonia Greenman. I'm a business owner and a single mom. I'm here as a consumer as well. I'm a single mom of three. I own my own business, and I also have used a interest only and a stated loan before. And I have a child going off to college, and without these products, I wouldn't be able to own a home. And so I'm just going to keep it short and sweet, but those are my concerns.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you very much for coming and giving us your testimony today. Next up, I'd like Diana Mullet. or maybe it's Donna Mulligan, Judy Woods, and Christopher Hubbard. Thank you. Go ahead and sit down and introduce yourself for the record. I appreciate it.
Good afternoon. My name is Judy Woods. I'm a senior mortgage consultant for Eli Financial, and I did testify last week on more specifics on what my concerns were. What I wanted to do today was I just wanted to read a scenario on how this would affect a middle-class American, basically. Once upon a time, a couple in their mid-30s, living in Portland in the 37% tax bracket, felt really good about their debt structure.
Ms. Woods?
Yes.
I hope you don't mind, but since you've already testified to us before and we can read what you've just given us,
okay.
I'd like to call up some people that haven't had an opportunity to testify before.
Okay.
And I appreciate you coming forward again and giving us a story. I'm sure each one of us will read it. So,
and we'll definitely give you an example of what you need.
I appreciate that. And with that, I'd really like to get somebody who hasn't had an opportunity to speak yet.
Okay.
Because we have time for about two more people, and that's it. Could I have Holly Smith and Sharman Buck and Chris Wagner, three people? Because they actually came from more than 100 miles away, and I'm sorry I didn't get you up quicker.
Oh, did it say 100?
That's what you marked down.
My mistake.
Which one are you?
Chris Mike.
Is Holly Smith here, or Shannon Buck? How about Brad I can't read it. Cornelis. Would you like to come forward? If you could just introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yeah, my name is Chris Wagner, and I'm a loan officer at U.S. Funding Group. I've lived in Oregon since 2000. And I'd like to read a letter from a good friend of mine. He addressed it to the Oregon State Senate and the House of Congress. To my representatives, I'm against all sections of Bill 965 that deal with that pertain to the real estate lending loans, mortgage brokers, loan officers, and loan products. I live and work in Oregon, and if the bill passes, I will probably lose my house. I first bought my house with a loan that falls under a non-traditional loan definition outlined in this bill, and it was a no documentation loan for 100% financing. And if I had to use the non-traditional loan because I am self-employed, and at this time, at the time I bought the house, excuse me. My house had only been in my current profession for 1 year. Both these factors eliminated my ability to obtain home financing with a traditional loan from a traditional bank. I never missed a payment, never made a late payment, but sometime in the near future, I will have to refinance my current mortgage when this rate becomes adjustable. I would like to use my mortgage broker for that. I was well aware of the loan parameters when I bought my house, and I am glad that I did. However, Senate Bill 965 will eliminate my ability to refinance, and I will most probably go into foreclosure. I'll keep it short and I'll leave it there.
Thank you. Could you introduce yourself for the record, please?
My name is Brad Cornelis, and I'm a branch manager here in Salem for Pacific Rim Mortgage. And
you move away from the mic a little.
Sure.
Bit very sensitive.
Okay. Is that better?
Get a lot of feedback. Yeah,
okay.
You can just sit back and talk.
All right. Well, Chairman Holvey, thank you so much for taking this time to listen to all of us. Obviously, as you can tell, There's quite an influx of people here, and both consumers and mortgage brokers and realtors, basically everybody who's in the real estate industry is scared to death of this bill, frankly. And you can see here all these people that are here and the people that aren't represented here, obviously. We feel that this is almost like a clarion call or like a call to arms to go and save our livelihood and to also save the real estate industry here in Oregon. Not only has it been said that the products are being looked at to be eliminated, like Representative Bonamici said, and no disrespect to you, but you said that this would not ban any interest-only loans or whatever. And actually, the language of the bill, it actually does. Anything non-traditional is considered in the language of the bill as interest-only or a two-year fixed or a three-year fixed or a five-year fixed loan or a stated income, stated asset loan or these other loans that are not 30-year fixed mortgages. And as has been illustrated already, excuse me, if we already have, if 75% of the real estate industry or the real estate market is non-traditional, these quote non-traditional loans, if you take that away, if we go with what the Senate has already taken away, then this state of Oregon is going to become a ghost town. It's going to be extremely difficult to not only purchase a home, but also to find a lender that will offer a loan for a borrower, any kind of borrower. Let me give you an example real quick. One of the most proudest families that I've ever helped, one of the most proudest loans I've ever had for a family that I helped, he had a 608 mid score. That was his middle credit score, okay? And he had been on disability for a year and a half, all right? He was self-employed for a year, but he'd been in the same industry for 5 years in flooring here in Salem, okay? He had 9 children, okay? And they were living in a 3-bedroom rental house. All right. His wife was working 16-hour days as a nurse, and they were absolutely slammed. They were doing everything they could. They wanted a home for their children. And through products like this, I was able to get them an interest-only 3-year fixed loan at 6.875%, okay, at 100% financing, 100%, which means they didn't have to bring in a dime to the title company when they bought their home. Okay, so just to make this short, representatives, all of you, this is why everybody is here. That's why everybody is so adamant about this bill, is because you're going to, not you, but the state of Oregon will eliminate this possibility for a family like that. And so I just wanted to tell you guys, thank you for listening to us. The reason why we're all here, the reason why we're all worried, is because this has already passed the Senate. And I agree, we heard nothing about this until last Tuesday. And that's why everybody's here. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony, and I appreciate your comments as well. And I think I might have time for one more person. Richard Blumenauer?
Actually, this is a note that he wrote. You want to read that? It's about 4 sentences long.
Okay, sure, why not?
Everybody here in the audience is going, great, read it. No, okay. Okay, this is one of my clients, and I'm happy that he actually was here, but he had to leave. I, Richard Blumenauer, grew up in Canada, where people live under a socialist system. I immigrated into America less than 4 years ago with no money and 2 garbage bags of belongings. I now live in a beautiful 4-bedroom, 2.5 bath, 2,000 square foot home, which I owe to these programs. This is a capitalist system where people like myself can have opportunity to live in their own American dream. I pledge to keep it that way.
Thank you. Does anybody else, have I skipped anybody that signed up? You testified earlier, I believe, Harriet.
I have one new thing to tell you.
Anybody else that hasn't testified yet? Can you come forward, please?
Thank you. I'm Philip Dunn. I'm a mortgage broker from Eugene, Oregon. and wanted to address Representative Riley's question for specifics on how this would hurt us.
In 60 seconds or less.
All right. Section 4, paragraph 1, says that I, as a mortgage broker, shall ensure that loan terms and underwriting standards for products are prudent. At the bottom of that paragraph, it says, I may not cede this to any other third party that would have different business objectives or risk tolerances. That means that I have to do it in-house. I do not have this capability. When I, on a daily basis, I look at underwriting guidelines from numerous lenders that have dozens and dozens of products and several different iterations of those products. I cannot decide whether or not those are prudent, or I don't have the capability to decide whether each program has prudent practices behind it. That's up to the lenders that are buying the loans and funding the loans and in turn selling those on Wall Street. So my seven-person company, I just literally cannot comply with this. And then in Section 12, it says if I do not comply with this, that I am liable for damages for up to 3 years on any suit that commences. So please don't allow any language like this to be in your bill.
Thank you very much for your short, to the point, and valid concerns. I appreciate everybody coming forward today. I am going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 965. I will be carrying over Senate Bill 965A and Senate Bill 484 until tomorrow at 1 p.m. Hearing Room C. With that, I'm going to adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection.